Radio Prague News.
Michal Kodelka has become the new head of Czech counterintelligence. Slovakia's mountain rescue has confirmed the death of a Czech speleologist. And tips left to restaurant or bar personnel will not come under a new electronic cash registers system. Michal Kodelka officially takes up the post of the BIS Counterintelligence Service on Monday. Mr. Kodelka, who is 51, has worked at the BIS since 1996 and has headed its counter-espionage section for 10 years. He is replacing the previous director, Jiří Lang, who decided to step down in June after 13 years in the post. The Counterintelligence Service is tasked with acquiring information on terrorism, extremism and illegal arms dealing, as well as the activities of foreign intelligence services. Slovakia's Mountain Rescue Service has confirmed that a Czech speleologist died in Slovakia at the weekend in a cave-in at a recently discovered natural cave near Banská Bystrica. The man lost consciousness when he was buried under debris in the collapse. Colleagues attempted artificial resuscitation, but the man's injuries proved too serious. Some 20 members of the rescue team were called to the scene. The site, known as Jeskyně Straceného prstenu, or Cave of the Lost Ring, was found in June. Tips given to personnel at Czech eating and drinking establishments will not come under an electronic cash registers system, Finance Minister Andrej Babiš indicated in his blog on Monday. The minister made clear that tipping was part of the Czech cultural tradition and that he saw it as a suitable means of recognizing services rendered. If venue owners and not personnel were left the tips, he stressed, those should be tabulated in the system. The first phase of the electronic cash registers system is to go into operation on December the 1st of this year. The Agriculture Ministry will launch a new funding program next year to improve irrigation, worth 1.6 billion crowns. In all, the government is to invest some 28 billion crowns by 2022 in fighting drought. The news was confirmed on Monday by Agriculture Minister Marian Jurečka, who said that along with irrigation, the government aimed to improve groundwater retention and to put money into renovating existing basins and ponds as well as building new ones. Penny Market has become the first supermarket chain in the Czech Republic to sell fruit and vegetables which don't fall within strict cosmetic standards. The wonky carrots and other less perfect produce will be supplied exclusively by Czech farmers and will be sold with a 10% discount. According to the supermarket chain's representatives, the chain wants to raise awareness of the fact that enormous amounts of food are wasted in the European Union each year. Turning quickly to sport, Czech goalkeeper Petr Cech, who plays for London club Arsenal, experienced something of a nightmare opening day of the season. In a match against Liverpool on Sunday night, the former Czech Republic international conceded 4 goals in the space of just 18 minutes. After suffering a 4-3 loss, the Arsenal goalkeeper then crashed his car in the Emirates Stadium car park. So a day to forget for him. I'm Jan Wellinger. You'll find more news at radio.cz.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, increased security at Prague Castle is leading to long queues. The Railway Infrastructure Administration is set to take over the country's 1,500 train stations. We have the roundup of the latest Czech sports news. And later we meet Irena Edwards, a lawyer in the UK who is now working to promote conservation in her native Czech Republic. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Beefed up security at Prague Castle is leading to long queues as tourists are forced to wait to have their belongings checked by a ring of police, soldiers and castle guards. The latest measures, which have just come into effect, are causing major disruption at one of the Czech Republic's top tourist sites. Dominik Yun has the details.
Increased security at Prague Castle was promised in the wake of a scandal back in September 2015 when a group of activists managed to hang a giant pair of red boxer shorts from the castle roof in protest at Miloš Zeman's supposed affinity for authoritarian regimes. But the castle claims that tightened security is in reality a response to the current situation in Europe, with constant concerns over potential terrorist attacks demanding increased vigilance. The latest measures, unveiled last week, have seen all visitors subject to checks on their belongings. However, critics say the measures are unnecessary and that the Czech castle does not face the kind of terrorist threat which would necessitate such measures. Some have even accused Zeman of a self-aggrandizing publicity stunt, but President Zeman has stated that he believes the castle is a potential terrorism target and has been provided an extra 100 million crowns by the government to beef up security. Jan Papež is the deputy chair for external relations at the Association of Czech Travel Agents. He points out a disparity often voiced by critics of the measures.
If you see all the other castles and all the other attractions which are offered to the client in Czech Republic, it looks a little bit strange. We are not happy on it, but discussion with the people from the castle and from the team of president is very difficult, and then if they say you need it for protect, it's very difficult to say something.
The new measures unveiled across all four entrances are most evident at the main gates to the castle. They have led to queues several hundred metres in length. Now, in peak season, fears exist that such measures could harm the tourist industry. Jan Papež remains pragmatic on this point.
I think that in this time, in this world, every security have to be accepted. Of course, time will show what is unnecessary and what is necessary.
As to the future, airport-style metal detectors will evidently not be installed at the entrance to Prague Castle, but they will be installed at St. Vitus Cathedral within the complex. Also, CCTV surveillance is to be expanded. Back in April, the castle closed an entrance to the Southern Gardens for security reasons due to their proximity to the president's offices. The president's spokesperson, Jiří Ovčáček, says that the castle will continue in its efforts to beef up protections in the ensuing months. However, efforts will also be made to limit the inconvenience to tourists, he said.
Dominic Yoon with that report. Following the transfer of around 1,500 train stations around the Czech Republic to a new owner later this month, the focus won't just be on the state of the building themselves. Contracts with newsagents, bakeries and other outlets are also set to come up for review. Ian Willoughby has more.
The Railway Infrastructure Administration, or RIA, which oversees the country's dense rail network, will completely take over the Czech Republic's 1,500 or so train stations from current owners Czech Railways, another state body, at the end of August. Once this happens, the RIA will launch an inspection of all of those buildings. But it will also, the news website Lidovky.cz reported on Monday, examine the existing contracts to run refreshment stands, news agents, baked goods, outlets and vending machines at station buildings. This will see the spotlight turned on long-term contracts with big companies, among them Lagardère, JLV and Delicomat, Lidovky.cz said. A spokesperson for the RIA, Katarzyna Szubowa, told Lidovky.cz that once the handover of the stations had been completed, an analysis would take place of individual contracts with a view to setting the boundaries of further cooperation. Ms. Szubowa said she didn't want to speculate as to the outcome of that review, but said one result could be a process of renegotiating conditions. While she refused to reveal details of individual contracts, she said the figures involved were in the tens of millions of crowns a year. A number of chains extended their contracts to the year 2029 prior to Czech Railways' transfer of the stations to the RIA. This was done on the basis of amendments to deals dating back to 2004, when tender processes were held. Among those up for review will be a contract with JLV, formerly known as Jídelní a Lůžkové vozy, or Dining and Sleeping Cars. It's provided catering services to Czech Railways for many years and signed a new six-year deal this spring. For their part, the operators say they don't fear a contract review process, Lidovky.cz reported. Jiří Marek of vending machines market leader Delicomat told the news site his firm was always ready to sit down with business partners. Meanwhile, JLV boss Bohemir Barta said his company had already been in talks with the RIA and expects the new owner to overhaul or even rebuild shabby stations. Richard Kalhaus of Lagardère, which runs Relay and Costa Coffee, said his firm also hoped the change in ownership would mean investment in reconstruction. Lagardère would be interested in projects stemming from station overhauls, he told the news website.
Ian Willoughby with that report. And Ian stays in the studio with the roundup of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin, of course, with the Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro, and it was very much a bronze weekend for the Czech Republic. The Czechs now have one gold and five bronze medals after picking up four more of the latter on Saturday and Sunday. Underscoring the country's great tradition in the sport, three of those fresh bronze medals came in tennis. For Petra Kvitová in the women's singles, for Lucia Šafářová and Barbara Strýcová in the women's doubles, and for Lucia Hradecká and Radek Štěpánek in the mixed doubles. The latter pair's success has been a real fairy tale. At one point, Štěpánek thought he wasn't even going to Rio, while he and Hradecká signed up for the mixed doubles less than a week ago. Hradecká had this to say after Sunday's bronze medal game.
Je to super, že se vlastně povedlo ve všech disciplínách, kromě vlastně chlapského, dosáhnout medaily.
It's super that in all disciplines, with the exception of the men's singles, we've managed to take a medal. What's more, we all have them in the same colour. It's amazing, and all the more so given that we didn't even know until the last moment whether we would get in or what would happen. As it is, we are leaving with a medal. It's a wonderful feeling.
S medailí je něco úžasného a skvělý úplně pocit.
Hradecká, who is 31, already had an Olympic medal, a women's double silver she earned with Andrea Hlaváčková in London. But Štěpánek had left both Beijing and London empty-handed and tasted Olympic success for the first time ever on Sunday. The 37-year-old joked that Hradecká had helped him avoid having to try yet again at the next Olympic Games.
Škoda, že to jednou za 4 roky.
It's a pity it's only every 4 years. I'm glad that Lucia has put the brakes on my trip to Tokyo a bit and that I won't have to put such an effort in to get there. This rounds off my medals cabinet wonderfully. I've got Grand Slam titles, Davis Cup wins, and now this Olympic medal. Along with the Davis Cup, the Olympics mean the most to me because I think there is simply no more wonderful feeling than winning for our country.
Radek Štěpánek. The other Czech bronze at the weekend went to rower Ondřej Sinek. His single sculls result followed silver in Beijing and London. Though he has been crowned world champion a very impressive 4 times, Sinek has never matched that success on the biggest stage of all.
Co k tomu říct? Olympiádu jsem nevyhrál. Možná už ji asi ani nevyhraju, nevím.
What can I say? I've never won an Olympics and maybe I never will. I will be 34 in October. I'd like to keep going until Tokyo if my health remains good and my back is okay. This year I had a broken vertebra and it made my life difficult. It was hard to finish the season. We'll see.
Nebylo to jednoduché vůbec jako dokončit tu sezonu a uvidíme.
Roar Ondřej Sinek, and that's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. The Czech Republic has an enormous wealth of historical landmarks, much of which is in need of repair. One of the groups working to improve the situation is the Czech National Trust, based in Great Britain. Ian Willoughby met its founder, Dr. Irena Edwards, for this edition of One on One.
Dr. Irena Edwards is the head of the Czech National Trust, a UK-based organisation that supports conservation in the Czech Republic. Dr. Edwards left Prague at a young age and continued her law career in Britain, where she became a high flyer in the corporate world. Her dual qualification meant she was much in demand when the Iron Curtain came down, and she spent much of the 1990s helping UK firms get a foothold in her now democratic native country. When we spoke at the tea rooms of London's Royal Academy of Arts, of which she's a member, I asked you what had sparked the formation of the Czech National Trust. But I was first curious as to what had led Dr. Irena Edwards to leave her homeland to begin with.
Well, I have not liked living in a communist country. It somehow infringed my basic ideas about how I should be living. And I was sort of working with people who were involved in Charter 77, even when I was a bit too young and I didn't sign it. But I was working with them and my boyfriend signed it. And I sort of basically was politicized very early on. And I really, really thought that this is not my life. So I just emigrated in 79, 80.
Had you studied law in Prague?
I studied law in Prague. I have got a doctorate from Charles University in law, and then I requalified in Britain, and I'm a solicitor.
Was it a hard thing to adjust to a whole other law system?
It was incredibly hard. I have absolutely hilarious stories told by various tutors from the law school in London, because I was permanently not understanding basic principles. Like, it was unknown for me to go to a tutor and ask, what is this mortgage? This is a ridiculous concept. We don't have that. In the end, because I never learned English at school, I learned from listening to people in England. I couldn't often write it down in the law school, so I was borrowing notes from this very nice Cambridge graduate next door. I was copying them, and then I was learning from them. But needless to say, I passed, and that time it was 48% pass rate of English graduates to do that course which I was trying to do.
And apart from the concept of mortgages, what was the single hardest thing to kind of get your head around here?
Oh my God, well, definitely trusts. Trust is something which is just, that was a totally, totally unintelligible concept. And of course also the unwritten British constitution. I remember that was taught to me in a fish and chip shop by my husband night before the exam. Because I have given up of ever understanding the concept. So my husband just talked about it over fish and chips. And I went and passed the exams next day.
If I understand it right, you went back in the 90s to do business in Prague. How did you find that?
It was amazing. I found myself the only dual Czech and English lawyer in town. So I had a rather easy ride. Well, easy ride. I found myself acting for most of the British PLCs trying to come in and buy Czech silver, and sort of permanently stuck in a steel mill of Northern Moravia doing deals. Well, it was an interesting period. I remember that nothing worked properly. It took us hours to get to the factories, and then I was sitting there with 25 men, all of them smoking 70 cigarettes a day. I've got tender memories, I think, of it.
From your perspective, how long did it take the Czechs to kind of appreciate the idea of rule of law?
Well, it did take a little bit, but I have to say that Czechs are a pretty nippy nation. They actually take to professional concepts fairly well. I did have to deploy various interesting sort of sets of behavior to start with. Like, one of the most hilarious things were that you would have whole management of the factory coming to a meeting. You would negotiate for 18 hours a concept, which they would understand, agree, then they would go away and come next day, and it would be all gone, and it wouldn't be there, and we could start again. So in the end, I deployed a system that I had a yellow stick, and where we sort of wrote everything which we said, and we signed both sides every page. Every night we signed all the pages which we have agreed, and all the yellow stickers which we have agreed.
To stop them slipping back or changing things.
Exactly. Next day, because it was next day, it would start again.
When did your interest in preservation begin?
Well, I was always interested in preservation and in art and heritage. Probably my granny was the first person who sort of brought it across. My granny was a very formidable woman, and she ran as a castellan, as a manager, one of the largest Gothic castle in Czech Republic, Castle Kost, for like almost 30 years after the communists took it over. And she, I understand that the family of my granny and my grandpa were there in servitude to the Dalborgo-Netolisky well before that. So I was actually, my granny, as soon as she found out that I can speak languages, she would use me mercilessly in the summer as a volunteer and pay me really measly money, like 10 crowns a week. So that it was
as a tour guide.
Because I spoke German and Russian, and so she just didn't speak any of those languages. So she used me for that. And then I saw my granny running around the village and trying to persuade people with her hair, trying to persuade people that she has got water running across sort of some valuable painting in a castle, and would they give her some money to do something about it? It was very, very exciting. And I always appreciated art. And actually, my study of law was a real mistake. I, at the same time, was accepted to Academy of Arts, and I chose law, which I thought always was a mistake. So this is really, really, I'm just, you know, coming back to what I was meant to do, and I'm sort of connecting the circle together, I would say.
When you were going back to Prague, when you were spending time in Prague and the Czech Republic in the 1990s or the 2000s, would you have often gone to chateau or decrepit mansions?
No, not at all, because I was working 24/7. I was heavily exploited by a city law firm. No, I didn't. I only remembered how wonderful it was and how I used to do it when I was a small child and when I was going to see my granny.
So what sparked the establishment of the Czech National Trust?
My working with a small English-based charity called Friends of Czech Heritage, whom I then chaired for 2 years. And as I was running around Czech Republic speaking about English heritage to castellans and other people, they all said, well, this is all right that you come here, you collect 500 quid or 1,000 quid, and then you go and restore bits and bobs of our heritage. But actually, it's about something else. We need more. And so I started delving in, and I discovered them all, that there was a real sort of what I would say, that what I never thought about much, because I was always working very hard in a city, and I traveled extensively in my job because I was head of Central Eastern Europe, so I was always in some sort of obscure place like Almaty or something. So I discovered that the communist era was very damaging. It left properties uncared for, changed their use often to their detriment, and mainly instilled in people a feeling that heritage had nothing to do with them. It was for the state to care. And that was the message which I was getting from people, from the stakeholders of the idea. And that's got me to try and establish it. But it took some time because the idea is not mine and it's not new. There were several groups of people who in the 90s tried to do it. And actually, I met at some point Prince Charles, and he told me he tried that in the 90s and he failed. And he was actually quite funny about it. And he said, well, keep me informed. And then he sort of turned back to me and said, Czechs are tricky.
Given that there are Czech state agencies looking after old buildings and castles and so on, how do they view private institutions also seeking to help?
Well, I have spent almost 2 years running around Czech Republic talking to all the potential and varied stakeholders of the idea of heritage and care thereof. So I have formed some good relationships, and I can say that we are sort of well tolerated by all groups which I met. And I did speak many times to the general director of the state heritage institute and to the ministry people in charge of heritage and to the private association of private owners and to many of the sort of like numerous now people from various villages who started associations to care for some disused property nearby. And I must say that that even made me feel more determined to establish something which could work similar way as British National Trust. But in Czech Republic, it would take in account the different historical, legal and other circumstances which are leading to its establishment.
How do you think the Czechs have done in looking after their material heritage?
Well, I think there was a lots of the properties were saved and they look wonderful again. And one has to look at it as that it's not that long. It takes quite a long time to actually sort out a heritage which has been neglected to that degree as it was in 20 years. I'm hopeful.
Also, there's a lot of it.
And there's a lot of it. Yes, there's actually what I wanted to say. One of the reasons which I forgot to mention was that the Czech Republic lists over 40,000 sites classified as national heritage. And there are 12 UNESCO sites, which in terms of per meter ratio is more than France or Italy. So there is a reason. And, the restitutions and to private owners, well, they do their best, so does the state. But it's not for state to care. You have to establish really a community which will look after these properties in place where they are and start treating them as their own, like in Britain. Well, I'm hopeful. That's what I think will at some point happen.
Irena Edwards, founder of the Czech National Trust, was Ian Willoughby's guest on that edition of One on One, which was first broadcast in January this year. And that brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Frankova. Thank you very much for joining us. And goodbye.